Welcome back, Eric Addy, Everyday Hustle. Hey, so it's been a minute. It's been quite a few minutes. Actually, I believe it was December of last year was the last episode that I recorded. And it's, you know, it's been interesting. As I mentioned in a previous episode, I took on a new job. And I've actually since then taken on a different role, similar but different role in the organization. Had, you know, the stress and trials and tribulations of family life, and, you know, had all kinds of just craziness. And so I decided to take a pause and get my shit in order. And I have finally hit a point where I have some semblance of free time in the evenings. Yeah, so we're going to dust off the podcasting skills and see if we can't get this being a regular habit again. I know that I've ended the last three or four episodes. I've gone back and listened to every single one of them, trying to get the mojo flowing again. And the last three or four, I said, I'm not going to take forever to put the next one out. And you know what? I'm done making promises that I can't keep. So maybe this is the last one of 2021. Maybe this is the last one of this week. I don't fucking know, but we're going to find out. So anyway, thank you for tuning in. And let's dive right in. So I was on LinkedIn this morning, and there was a article about the hashtag Great Resignation. And it was talking about how there have been more resignations in corporate America this year than ever before. And, you know, there was LinkedIn news. They hit you with the story. And then if you scroll down, you know, there's, you know, 10 to 20 thought leaders and their shared version of that post and their two cents on it. And I was getting really frustrated because I was scrolling down and it was, oh, they need more, you know, hybrid flexibility of work from home or work from the office. Oh, they need more diversity, equity and inclusion. You know, oh, they need better benefits. And I just got angry. Because what people need is to be paid what they're worth. There's a bar graph that was floating around, and if I feel fancy enough, I might go find it and link it in the show notes. But you know, it was going back to the 1920s or 30s, and it was showing productivity and wages, and productivity has this hard hockey stick climb as technology advanced, especially in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and wages did not. And you know, politics aside, whether you're conservative, you're liberal, you're fucking agnostic, whatever the fuck you are, I think we should all agree that people deserve to be paid what they're worth. And believe it or not, it does not start at the top. It starts at the bottom. So it's infuriating that minimum wage has stayed at $7.25 at a federal level since right after I got out of fucking high school. It's insulting, actually. And I say it starts at the bottom because, in my opinion, the bottom dictates everything else. So if your entry level folks are only making $7.25, then you don't really have to do that steep of a climb to get to a assistant management role, a management role, a director role, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and so, you know, anybody who says, well, someone flipping burgers doesn't deserve to make the same I do. Well, hey, dipshit, help yourself to economics 101, because if the bottom goes up, the rest will follow. In fact, inevitably, it has to, because for every dipshit like you, there's a bunch of reasonable people that will go to their employer and go, hey, I see they got a raise. I have tenure and experience and, you know, whatever. And I'd like a raise as well, and the market will dictate it going up. So the second issue that I see beyond paying people what they're worth is proactively paying your current employees what they're worth. There's this saying that the most leverage you ever have in dictating what you earn is when you leave a company, or when you join a company. And that's true. I've had to fight tooth and nail to be paid what my experience level at my role would be worth, and not just my current employer, but multiple other jobs I've had in my past, just because the benchmark is already set at your current wage. So it doesn't matter what the new role pays based on the market. It's based on your current role and a percentage, increase or a percentage cap in some cases, based on your current income. And that's fucking stupid. It's absolutely fucking stupid because, you know, let's use whole numbers, and let's say you're making $75,000, and you've been making that for a few years, and you get promoted, and you know, it's a significant promotion in title and in expectation, and you go to Glassdoor, and Glassdoor says that role should be paying you $130,000. And so you get this offer expecting, man, I'm probably going to go from 75 to, you know, $130,000, $135,000. And you get an offer and it's, you know, $90,000. And you go back to HR and you go, the fuck? And HR says, well, it's based on how long you've been with the company. It's based on your current employment. And, you know, all of a sudden you're having to go point them at Glassdoor and show them what the market dictates that role's worth based on where you live. And now you're negotiating and bickering back and forth and landing on a number that neither of you is going to be fucking happy with. And that's not a good way to retain employees, and especially retain happy employees. You know, a lot of companies do annual merit increases, and, you know, I've seen everything from 0% to, you know, some of the more aggressive companies are doing 5 or 10%. And I'm winging this, so I'm venturing to guess that the cost of living in most areas is going up 3 to 4% every single year. You know, between cost of living and inflation and all these other things. And why is that important? Well, if you give somebody 0% increase year over year, or worse, 1 or 2%, they're still behind what their cost of living is where they live. And at minimum, the job should maintain the level of living that you gave the person when you hired them. So yeah, it's probably a little taboo that you're giving somebody a 5 or 10% raise and maybe they were mediocre at best. But that mediocre at best was probably a really good employee hiding in there somewhere who just wasn't putting forth the effort because they didn't feel the company was putting the effort back into them. And, you know, there's so many different, you know, case studies and stories out there. You look at Dan Price, the CEO of Gravity Payment. You know, he raised everybody to a minimum of $70,000 a year, and his productivity went up, you know, 3x, 4x, and, you know, people were happier, the retention was higher. And that has played out over and over and over. There was just recently a manufacturing company in Ohio that raised their minimum wage in their organization by $5, and same thing, productivity's up, retention's up, satisfaction is up. It's not fucking rocket science. Yes, it's really fucking cool if you have a keg of beer on tap in your break room, and it's fucking edgy if you have a ping pong table and any other Google cliche that you can think of. But at the end of the day, the nitro cold brew on tap doesn't pay the fucking electric bill. Cold hard cash does. And if you're paying your people what they're worth and proactively maintaining that style and you know, cost of living, your people will fucking bend over backwards for you. They'll put company first. They'll go that extra mile. They'll put in that extra time, and they will be loyal employees that aren't on Glassdoor looking around for different jobs and seeing what the market's paying out there, because they feel that their company has them taken care of. And it only happens when the company starts being proactive. Anyway, it's a short episode today. I just wanted to get that off my chest. There's a lot of other things, you know, benefits. Yeah, there's a lot of cool benefits out there. You know, the biggest thing you could do, and a lot of tech companies do it. I know my brother-in-law, I don't remember if it was his current company or a previous company, but they paid 100% of medical for his entire family. I pay, you know, a significant amount every 2 weeks towards my medical premiums. And I'm fully aware that every company has a chip in that they pay towards their employees' medical premiums too. But you don't have to give me a raise if you're cutting my cost elsewhere. So, you know, you want to have some kick-ass benefits, cover medical. So I'd like to have a full disclaimer that this is in no way a reflection of my current employer or my feelings about my current employer. In fact, this is just a culmination of a lot of jobs I've had in the past and a lot of feedback I get from people in other industries and other companies, and just the bleeding heart progressive liberal in me that's also a capitalist and has a little bit of common sense. But in no way is this me trying to eviscerate my current employer, because while they're not perfect, they take good care of me. So anyway, yeah, new episode. How about that? Pay your people. How about that? While we're catching up and dusting off some skills, let me tell you a little story. So, you know, we were in lockdown for a year and a half. Didn't really get to travel. Barely got to go into the office at all. And so in July, I was pretty fucking ecstatic because I had a work trip and a conference back to back, 2 weeks solid travel, fully vaccinated. Did all the right things, all the safe things, wore my mask, took my vitamins, went to a call center of one of our partners in Jamaica, of all places, which is not a bad first place to go travel to after a year and a half of isolation or quarantine or lockdown or whatever you call it. Home for the weekend, get back on a plane, go to Las Vegas, my least favorite city in the entire United States that's not in the state of Ohio. And side note, the only reason I hate Vegas is I've been there. I guess this was trip number 28 or 29, and only three of those trips were for personal. The rest were all business conferences, business meetings, etc. And you know, that the town is real easy to get sick of real quick. Everything's a million mile walk. It's hot. It's dry. Everything smells like, you know, stale smoke. It's not my thing. It was when I was 20, had a great time on those three personal trips I took there. But I go to this conference in Vegas, still being safe, doing all the right things, trying my best to be, you know, that forward thinking American in the middle of a pandemic. I come home, I have the sniffles. I don't feel so hot. Kind of feels like I have a sinus infection. And you know, my wife says, hey, you should probably go to the doctor. I was like, oh, it's fine. It's just a sinus infection. It's probably just allergies and all the flying. And she goes, yeah, just be safe. Go get swabbed. I was one of those, 30% vaccinated people that had a breakthrough Delta case, which was fun. It was terrifying for a hot minute, leaving the doctor thinking, Jesus Christ, am I going to end up on a ventilator? Am I going to be in the hospital? Am I going to die? Am I going to have a heart attack? You know, you've read all these horror stories and heard all these anecdotes, and it was high anxiety. Then there was the anxiety of, oh fuck, am I going to get my immune compromised, but also vaccinated wife sick? Am I going to get my 5-year-old daughter sick? Who from work could I have possibly gotten sick? And so knock on wood, I seem to be the lone person of my company that came home with COVID, though a lot of folks from one of our vendors who I attended their cocktail reception. It was one of the only times I was unmasked, and I just happened to be unmasked in a small bar with loud music and everyone shouting to hear each other and, you know, nuts to butts and face to face. And so it was, that's where I got it. But only one from my company, knock on wood, my wife and my daughter were both COVID free. I sat in isolation in my guest room for 10 days, 10 days wearing a mask 24/7, 365, prison style, having my meals dropped at the door, and, you know, just left to binge watch TV, work, and then read Google and WebMD and every other medical thing I could find and, you know, freak myself out and give myself anxiety. And then what time wasn't spent on any of those things was eating in, you know, mass quantities like an asshole, you know, from DoorDash and whatever, parenting over FaceTime because my daughter's Montessori school wouldn't have her since she had been exposed to me with COVID. And then left to my own, you know, devices on Amazon and you know, other shopping outlets on my phone. And I tell you all that because, you know, so moral of the story is I was fine. It was a very mild case. I the worst part was the anxiety and the isolation. And when you take an extroverted sales guy and you put him in a room for 10 days and he can't, you know, leave, that sucks. But whilst I was in isolation, I started plotting my revamped Office 5.0. So I had seen a lot of different YouTube stuff out there about some IKEA hacks, and I put my own Eric Hattie spin on it. And I'm the proud new owner of a 8-foot long butcher block countertop desk with IKEA drawers. But I took it one step further, and there's now 110 inches of screen on this wall, and there's two 27 inch screens on this wall. And I found ways to make my M1 MacBook Pro run more than one external display, and everything is wired up real fancy like. For the most part, still a bit of a work in process. So thank God this camera doesn't show you everything down and behind me, because digging out all my podcast stuff, it turned into a bit of a rat nest shit show. I'll probably, I don't know. Maybe I'll put a picture of it right here. I don't know. So very expensive, but kept myself busy, kept myself occupied, gave me something to do. We're nerding out. So I'm just rambling, just babbling on. Thank you for tuning in. This is Everyday Hustle, and not going to make promises I can't keep, but maybe you'll hear from me again soon. Maybe you won't. I don't know. We'll find out. But for Eric Hattie at Everyday Hustle, I promise the next one may or may not come, but it definitely won't suck.